So Lee, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. Really lovely to be chatting with you today.
Oh, thanks for inviting me. It's a delight.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you on. You've had an amazing career in beauty, and you've worked with all manner of celebs and major beauty brands. What was the kind of thing that initially drew you to beauty? Like, what was the story behind that?
How long have you got? Right. Well, so when I was little, I grew up with a mum who absolutely loved beauty rituals, or so it seemed. And that was, I was born in 1965. So when I was a little girl, I used to watch her at her dressing table, and she'd put on her Max Factor pancake, and she'd have a Chanel eyeshadow, and she'd always do this beautiful violet eyeshadow and pots of creams and makeup bags. So I was always quite fascinated by this ritual she had, where she would sit down every morning and every evening and put on her makeup and take it off, and always have lovely fenugreek baths and body creams and all this kind of thing. And I think that when I was younger, when I was at school, I didn't get on well at school at all. And I didn't understand what was going on. I was extremely anxious. And so I left school at 16 and went to technical college. And the reason I went to technical college was to do beauty and hair. And my mum and dad sort of seeing that, clearly just straightforward, the teaching methods in schools, which have been the same for decades, just shooting facts, didn't suit my learning style. And that clearly the amount of TV shows I've watched, like Charlie's Angels and Dallas and all that kind of thing, and seemed fascinated by these transformations these women would go through. And they're always quite strong, dynamic characters, which is similar to my mum, really. They sent me to a technical college where I did beauty and hair. And what I learned there was that actually it wasn't that I was stupid, it was just the teaching methods didn't suit me, because I had far more of a creative slant on things. The way I saw the world was more creative. I was much more right-brained than left-brained. And I've sort of even had to sort of train my left brain, which is sort of more logical planning. But my natural inclination to be creative and want to play and explore really suited the beauty industry. And, starting off with beauty therapy and learning a bit about hair at sort of 16 to 18 was a great way of me really exploring that field. And so sort of fast forward a bit, once I'd done that and I kind of, messed around for a bit, as teenagers do, working in shops and nightclubs and that kind of thing. And then I was watching, reading different magazines like Vogue and Elle and all this kind of thing. And I started to see credits for makeup artists. And in complete naivety, I just thought, oh, well, I'll do that then. Absolutely no idea what I was about to embark upon. And so I think I was in my very early 20s by that point. I left the sort of shop I was working at and decided I would do some makeup courses. And again, the makeup courses taught me something else, in that I didn't need to be the best at what I was doing, but if I kept showing up, then I could get results. And I would show up, and where some of my sort of friends at the school were going out and getting, rat arsed on a Saturday night, I was practicing doing makeup because I was fascinated by it and all the textures. And back in those days, there wasn't the massive amount of choice you have in makeup. I mean, you would be hard pushed to get a matte eyeshadow. Do you know what
Yeah.
I mean? But that was really my entry into it. It was purely from sort of, childhood, watching TV shows, the influence of my mother, and also, my learning style and the fact that I lent in more easily to creative industries and being around creative people, which I found fascinating. And watching the way people could transform the way they looked through makeup, which was really an extraordinary thing in terms of their identity and the different personalities they could take on. You see it in films and that kind of thing. So yeah, that was my entry in. And I think, had I not been naive and thought, oh, I'll just go and do it, I probably wouldn't have done it had I known what I was going
Yeah,
to be down
what's
to
going on with that career, right?
along the next 30 years. I'd be like, wow, I had no idea it was going to be this tough.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was really my first entry into it. Yeah.
Gosh, your school days sound so familiar to mine, honestly. I feel
Do
like
they?
the beauty world is kind of a safe haven for a lot of us sort of lost sheep who were kind of failed by the system. I think the beauty world
Yeah.
provides that kind of, safe space for those of us who
Yes.
are interested in seeing the world in a different way.
Yes, 100%. And the play factor. I think the beauty industry can be an incredible playground to explore and to try things out. And I think play is something that we're losing more as we go through time, you know, as we sort of live in a more left brain society,
For
you know,
sure.
that ability to be able to play and see the world in different perspectives. And I think the beauty industry has been, you know, really influential for many people, many creative people in that.
I think it's an extension of like playing dress up, isn't it? With makeup, you can kind of become all these different people. That's what I found fascinating by it when I was a teenager, that I could just become this different person. If I opened this makeup palette, there was all these possibilities contained within, and that's what I found so exciting about it. Were there any
Totally.
makeup artists or techniques at the time that you were really inspired by?
Well, of course, back then, and as I in my naivety, and I was flicking through magazines, the two names that were huge at the time were Sam McKnight and Mary Greenwell. I mean, they were kind of the leads in the industry, and the landscape of the industry was very different then. You know, it was very much makeup artists were sort of more behind the scenes, but these two names would keep popping up. And here's a funny thing for you. I remember Sam was obviously crediting someone. I think it was Daniel Galvin, the hairdresser. And I remember in my naivety calling up Daniel Galvin and saying, can I get my hair done by someone called Sam McKnight? Of course, thinking he worked in the salon.
What was the response?
Well, I think they obviously thought it was some lunatic on the phone, but just sort of said, oh, I'm sorry, he doesn't work here. He does session work for us on our behalf. But of course, Mary Greenwell's name came up again and again because she was, you know, it's a hugely dynamic career. And I used to follow her quite heavily. And later on, as I got into the makeup industry, she became a huge mentor of mine and really took me under her wing for many years, actually. And was one of the sort of artists that was pivotal in me becoming successful.
I think the beauty industry is well known for that. I think that it's such a lovely supportive community in that sense. But I think it's what makes us kind of particularly unique.
And I think she'd been around such a long time, and I was sort of, you know, just starting out. And I think she, when I'd sort of finished my makeup course, I. Of course, we didn't have digital then. There was no social media. And so you had to write to photographers if you wanted to test with them. So I was trying to get a book together because, of course, you had to have a portfolio that you'd take around in a portfolio bag to show photographers. Completely different world. And I'd written to, I don't know, 200 photographers saying, can I test with you? And once I'd got sort of a bit of a book together and I'd approached an agency about assisting their artists, one of the first people I assisted was her. And it was the funniest thing because I remember sort of being this real rookie. And I got a call. And it was, do you remember, there was a model agency called Synchro. I don't know if you remember it, but they started a makeup division and Mary and Sam joined it. And I was there working with them, just doing makeup for the models for their test shoots. And I was asked to assist Mary on a Nicole Fahey show. And so Mary calls me up in my little flat on Saturday night, sort of because we weren't doing a show on the Sunday. I was just completely dumbstruck, thinking, how can I have got to the point where I'm going to be assisting this person? Absolutely not having clueless as to what I was going to be doing. But she was great and she let me do foundations the next day. And as I sort of managed to get through that first step, then she let me do a little bit of mascara. And you know, gradually she sort of, you know, took me on. But it's there are many. I mean, there's obviously a huge competitive element in the industry, but when you can find your tribe and you keep showing up, and I mean, I went in with a mindset very much of how can I leave people better off for me having been here, even if I wasn't doing great makeup, how can I be helpful, you know? And you know, I used to sort of make sure that I would tidy the brushes and make sure think ahead the whole time. Rather than being asked to do something, just think ahead. And that stood me in good stead because once I'd assisted her, then I was able to assist a lot of other good people and do the show circuit. It's a funny world, isn't it? You know, I got to the point where I was doing okay, you know, I was doing good work. But when Mary couldn't do a job, she would recommend me. And then all of a sudden I was in the door. Yeah, had she not recommended me, I would never have gotten the door. And that was when I was started working with people like Cindy Crawford and Claudia Schiffer and people like that.
Oh my gosh.
But it was purely because someone recommended me who they trusted. And so, you get your foot in the door like that. And then if you can prove that you can do the job, then you'll be asked back.
And I guess you were working at the time of like the 90s supermodel era. What an amazing time to be in on that scene and be, doing the makeup for those women. I mean, it must have been incredible, right? I bet you've got so many cool stories from that time.
Well, we were doing the show circuit. So, we'd do Paris, London, Paris, Milan, New York. And of course, the girls would keep coming to all the different shows. It was interesting, though, because even back then, this is where the sort of slightly seeing the whole beauty part slightly differently. I would watch these girls go on the catwalk, and I was always slightly curious as to what the audience was screaming about. Now, I knew aesthetically they fitted a model of how what beauty was, but no, they never spoke. It's not like now where you have, actors and models who they speak in the social media, and you're learning about that person and what their values are and what they believe in and whether they're an animal lover and what they eat and what their homes are like. You have this whole other insight into many celebrities now. But back then, they never spoke. So it was purely based on the aesthetic. And I remember thinking, is that where we are? It's just purely based, this adoration is purely based on an aesthetic image, which I found sort of curious, really. And that was something as I went sort of further into my career, I wanted to sort of unpick a bit more and wondered how the beauty industry would sustain that, really, and how we as a society would sustain that if it was just based on purely an aesthetic. And that was what was caught people's fascination, and that sort of cultural narrative of what success is. And it was being, at that time, being very beautiful and being on the covers of magazines. It didn't matter what your values were particularly, or
No.
whether you beat the dog at night or whatever. It was just you were symbolic of being powerful and beautiful, so it was an interesting time.
I remember my mum bought me a book about supermodels when I was a little girl growing up in that time, and they were like my superheroes. Like, they were like my Batman and Superman, like Claudia Schiffer and Naomi Campbell. And it's they represented that world of like escapist glamour. But then, as you say, there's that flip side to it that, what is that really representing or saying about our society, that is kind of what we should all be
Yeah, aspiring to. Yeah. Yeah.
physical perfection.
Yeah. And it's also, a projection of what we see in that, so it's an interesting sort of complex conversation. But yeah, so I remember sort of thinking at the time, though, gosh, there's all these people screaming and these girls are out there, but you don't hear who they are. Which was, but anyway, it was a fascinating time, and great to be part of it,
I can imagine. And I know you were talking about how, like, beauty and is so synonymous with creativity in terms of like playing with your makeup and, taking on these different personas. When did it really hit home for you, the real power of makeup when it comes to our wellness and our mental health and the sort of the shift it can bring about?
So it's quite an interesting story, actually, quite a long one. That was quite a long journey. It's a funny thing because you can know something on one level, and then suddenly there's an emotional connection with that sort of what I was seeing. So basically, I've been in the industry for a long time. I was sort of doing, beautiful covers of magazines, this kind of thing. And then I went through my own sort of mental health challenges. And I became quite depressed, quite anxious. I had sort of a bit of an anxious disposition anyway, as from a very young age. And, I was a single parent. There was an awful lot happening in my life. And I had been asked to be the ambassador of a charity that had started that was all around going into the vulnerable sectors of society and creating makeovers. But I was supposed to be the ambassador that was really, because of the name I had, being out front talking about the work that was done. But then I wanted to actually go and do the work and be with the people who were going through these challenges. And through one thing and another, the charity, as it was set up, the people that were running it stopped it and said, look, you can take it over. And so they were fantastic. They funded it. And so I started working and going into places like Solis Women's Aid, putting events together for Help for Heroes, for when Grenfell happened. There was a huge event there, but many different sort of vulnerable sectors of society. And I think it came out of my own struggles. And I think the pivotal point was while I was the ambassador of this charity, I remember feeling really low one night and watching a TED talk where the person at the end who's talking about their own struggles sort of says, what do you hold in your hands that you can give away? What network do you have? What skills do you have that you can give away as like acts of service? And that kind of made, at the time, really sort of sat with me and resonated with me. And so I remember going down to Solis Women's Aid. I think it was a New Year's Eve. And I took another a few makeup artists with me. And we started just doing makeovers on these women down there who had been through the most horrendous domestic abuse. And there was one particular woman there, and her partner had been put away for, I can't remember how many years, basically for abuse and rape. And she hadn't been out for a long time. She was, you know, obviously traumatized hugely. And I did her makeup. She came in with this really heavy makeup on. And I sort of started to scale it down while talking to her about her features and, you know, what, you know, how she could change things up a bit. And we just got talking, really. And it was this lovely exchange. But what was interesting was that night, she actually went out with a couple of people she knew, and she wrote to me after, she said, I haven't been out in so long, but I felt really different. I felt like a different person. I felt like I'd connected with a part of myself I'd forgotten about. And I
Wow.
remember sort of reading this email and thinking, wow, that's extraordinary. And so it really came from there that as the more I went into these sectors and bought artists, and it got a bigger and bigger kind of initiative where we ended up doing hair, makeup, nails, massage. We would have a kind of photo corner with feather boas and top hats and fun things to put on, a photographer, and we kind of scaled up and they got bigger and bigger, these events. And you would see people coming in to these events who would all have a common challenge, whether it was domestic abuse, whether they were terminally ill, whether they had become carers for their war veteran partners. So they had this commonality with the people in the room, yet we were changing their environment. So when you change someone's environment, they're sort of immediately a little bit more alert, a little bit more of aware of what's going on. You know, they're not in a sort of unconscious rhythm. And we would do these makeovers, and they would just have this huge emotional shift. And the stories I started getting back were these experiences seemed to be the gateway towards them feeling something very different, which then had a ripple effect. And I remember one of the women from the domestic abuse charity, she had gone out after one of the sessions and bought herself a nail polish or something like that. And I remember sort of thinking, I didn't understand the significance of it. And she said, you don't understand, do you? And I said, no, help me understand what that means. And she said, I haven't bought myself anything nice in over a decade. And suddenly I felt that I was actually worth going out and buying something nice. So you would find these sort of little moments where these people would see something differently and feel something differently, which then led them to go and behave differently, to go and make a different decision about something. And I'm not saying we, you know, change lives forever, but we did give people an opportunity to experience something that was unique to them at that time with the challenges they were facing. And I mean, referring back to our identity piece and about the creativity and stuff, when people go through these huge challenges, their identity is often brought into question. Who am I now? Who am I after this domestic abuse? Who am I after this, you know, person I thought I was? And I'm either, you know, chronically ill, I'm terminally ill, I have been, you know, I'm now the carer rather than the wife to my partner. Our relationship has changed. There's all these identity pieces as we go through these different phases of life. And we found that, you know, we were doing, I remember one gig for Help for Heroes, and we used to do the gigs just for the women. And then I said, well, what about if we bring the war veterans in? Now, it was an issue there because a lot of them have PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. So we had to be very careful of the sounds in the room, making sure everyone was steady. There were there was nothing sudden, and they were chosen by Help for Heroes as the ones that would be most able to come and make it. And so these gentlemen came along with their wives, and it was extraordinary because they would get their barbering done and their feet done. They would watch their wives go through this transformation, and together they would go and have pictures taken, and playful pictures. And you'd see the way they behaved around each other start to change, and the letters again started coming in, like, I felt completely differently towards my wife. I saw her for who she was, and I saw my husband for who I remembered him being. It changed the dynamic just for a little bit. And it was just really, really fascinating to me as to here we were as artists doing what we do, yet here were people in unbearable life challenges, it seemed, in some of them, yet they would feel something very different, and there was a ripple effect to it. So, I mean, that was where I really started to see that the power of beauty, which is often seen as being frivolous and it's about consumerism and selling products, that there is a deeper part to this that is really underrated and undervalued and underspoken about, quite frankly, and underspoken about. And it's a shame because when we lost the funding eventually, we did it for, I think, about 4 years. And when we lost the funding, all of the people, all the charitable organizations who we were going in to do this work with just said, I just wish this was the sort of thing that could be funded, that was seeing the validity of this could be funded, because we see what it does for people. We can see it. But it's not something that is. You get the odd study about it, about makeup for people who have mild depression, that kind of thing. But it's not something that's heavily researched. So, it goes back to, well, have you got the research, and is it worth the money, and that kind of thing. So I think that was a very long-winded way of
No, not at all. No, it's
telling you that was really where I saw the huge benefits that beauty and these rituals can have in people's emotional well-being. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's so profound. And like you say, people are so quick to dismiss the beauty industry as being frivolous, but as you've illustrated, it can really have that sort of powerful impact on people and their, emotional well-being, and it can change lives.
Yeah.
I mean, what is your kind of intuitive, I know you said there's not much research that's been done on this, but what do you sort of feel, what is your kind of take on it all and how it kind of the sort of psychological power behind it?
Look, I think very, very rarely in life have I found that there's ever one complete solution. There's usually lots of sort of components to creating a solution to a problem with, say, mental health, for example. But the beauty part, I'm convinced, in many people can be extraordinarily helpful for them psychologically. It not only that, if you look at what is it that distresses humans, when you look at if you look at stress, for example, and stressors. So stressors are the things that stress us out. Stress is the psychological and physiological response to those stressors, right? It's a generic system. It's mobilized, activates our alert response. So that's when we get, if you think of it on a continuum, when people get very stressed out, that's when they get into anxiety. And too much of that in one's life, then we head into anxiety, low mood, depression, right? This underpins all mental health, challenges. But what do people need in order to be mentally healthy? Well, they need to sort of get certain needs met in the environment. So I think that a ritual can have a beginning, middle, and end that is known. You know the outcome, right? And it can be a helpful ritual in the morning for people to get a sense of certainty in their life. When people are stressed out, it's often accompanied by a sense of uncertainty and being out of control, feeling out of control. And safety and control are primal human emotional needs. So you could say a ritual in the morning or in the evening that has a beginning, middle, and end that you can punctuate with some therapeutic, influences. So say you're going through a skincare ritual and you're doing a particular breathing that is helpful, that you're dialing your vision out, because when we're stressed out, our pupils are dilating and we go into sort of, portrait mode in terms of our field of vision. There are certain things you can do to tap into your biology to help mobilize the opposite of the alert response, which is a relaxation response. So the breathing, the longer out breath, two counts longer than your in breath, touch, visual, the words you're saying to yourself as you're going through this ritual. And it can be a ritual that you know what the end's going to be. Do you know what I mean? So it gives a sense of control. And I think that, that's where, when we can start to sort of think of beauty as less as, don't I look gorgeous, which is one of the outcomes, actually what's happening internally and how can I weave in some of these more therapeutic disciplines into this and really create more self-awareness as to what am I thinking, what am I saying, what am I doing as I'm going through this ritual? Because with self-awareness, we're going to be able to take a step back from any sort of problems or challenges we're having and come up with a more of a solution focused approach. It's when we're caught up in an emotional turmoil or I'm in a, have, you know, sort of emotionally hijacked because we're in so much of a stress response, we're not be able to think straight. When you know all of this and you enjoy beauty, you enjoy rituals, you enjoy putting your makeup on, you can weave in these therapeutic disciplines in a way that is pleasurable, right? And there's a huge part in pleasure and joy. Pleasure can be fleeting, but looking for joy in the moment. And this is where putting on your makeup, your blusher, your skincare, your highlighter, your ritual, it can all be woven together to create a potent ritual that can be very helpful for people and create moments of lovely joy. There's a thing in a word that we often use in therapy called, scanning the environment for glimmers. Comes from something called polyvagal theory, which is to do with the vagus nerve in the body. And glimmers are really, you scan the environment for moments of joy, because often in life it's having the awareness of what's happening in the moment and where are the glimmers, where are the moments of joy that I can appreciate right now, rather than waiting for this huge transformation that's going to happen sometime in the future and I'll be happy when I get there. So and beauty in these rituals and putting on a bright lipstick can produce these glimmers that are easy and accessible. And you can do every day, and it's fun.
As opposed to being choresome is the way it's kind of often made out, that it's, oh, it's the women's burden, women have to do this extra labor in order to fit into what's, this ideal that society has prescribed for them. Whereas actually it's like you say, it can actually be kind of something that's a pleasure and a joyful part of your daily routine, as opposed to this thing that's foisted upon us.
And I think you make a really relevant point there. Because when we talk about a cultural narrative of having to fit a sort of beauty ideal and this kind of thing, which when we get into that, we're getting into competition. And when you get into competition, you're out of collaboration. And that causes, unhappiness. And I remember actually interviewing a happiness economist called Professor Lord Richard Layard. So he advises government about systems and policies that create the happier society. And he talks a lot about the happiest countries being Scandinavian countries. And the reason is they're into collaboration, right? Rather than competition. Now, when you are not aware of the narrative you're buying into, or the influencer you're buying into, and the beauty ideal you're buying into, then you get stuck, because that's where beauty can have the downside to it. So it's like everything. You need to understand what you're buying into and what you're doing and what you're believing about it. And once you get that self-awareness going, then that's where I think beauty can have a huge benefit,
I agree. For me, as I'm getting older, beauty is more like, right, I'll take these bits of it, but I'll leave kind of the anti-aging stuff that, oh, you need to look, you need to be a certain size or, a certain
Exactly,
age in order
exactly.
to be acceptable. That's the stuff that I try and dismiss. Doesn't always work, but and then this is,
Well, yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? It's having the awareness of what am I believing? What am I absorbing? What's helpful? Is what I'm absorbing and digesting and believing, is it helpful for the way I see the world, the way I see myself, my internal narrative, that kind of thing? If you're looking in the mirror thinking, God damn it, I don't look like that influencer who might have a filter or might not or whatever, and damning yourself for it, and that's not helpful,
No.
right? So it's that awareness of that. and using these beauty products and rituals as tools to enhance, you know, what you believe, what you value about yourself, and the things, you know, and to create some joy.
And I think it makes a wider point about the nature of living a good life and happiness in general, that I feel like thanks to popular culture and the movies, we're sold this idea that one day we're going to be like swept up out of our normal lives and this
Oh
change
my
is going to
God.
come about like a thunderclap and everything's all going to fall into place. Whereas actually realizing that it's just these small little it can be found in these small little mundane moments, isn't it, in life. Like the process of becoming happy is actually very mundane and very slow burn. It's a huge slow burner. And the sort of the point I'm trying to make is that, just things like little rituals, like even just putting on your makeup every morning, that can be part of a bigger picture when it comes to kind of lifelong well-being and happiness, as opposed to this big Hollywood moment that we think is going to arrive.
And also, I mean, if you've ever had a big Hollywood moment, how long does it last? Well, you're sort of thinking, oh, what next?
Yeah, and it's
You know,
not
it's the
ended
nature of humans.
by
You know, we can often keep going for this. And also, it's the narrative, isn't it? It's the narrative around us is success looks like this. You know, it's big, it's loud, it's big transformations, da da, you know, here I am, I've, you know, achieved this, got that. But yeah, I mean, absolutely, to make it achievable and accessible and small wins, you know, there's huge benefit in that.
So is that everything that you said about working with the charity? Is that what kind of led you to ending up working in mental health as well?
Yeah. So after sort of going through that, I mean, I've always been fascinated by human behavior, I guess. And I think probably because I had my own mental health challenges with anxiety and that kind of thing, I would listen to a lot of sort of American coaches and this kind of thing, you know, Tony Robbins, people like that. Yeah. So once I had done the charitable initiative, all that sort of work, I just thought, isn't this fascinating? You know, what is it? I'd love to know more about what is it we're doing here that is really creating such an impact. And that's when I retrained and I became what's called a human givens therapist. So basically, it's a lovely holistic model around what it really takes for a human to be healthy. And it looks at the environment, emotional needs. And it's a very non-voyeuristic, holistic model of mental health. It's very solution focused and very gentle. So I studied that. And that was where, you know, I really learned about emotional needs when I was talking to you earlier about, you know, safety and security, you know, autonomy and control. You know, and when we're talking about competition status, you know, feeling of value, but look at the underbelly of status, that can also be, you know, I need to be the most important person in the room, you know, which is, you know, when you're not getting that need met in balance, it can get out of control. So, you know, I could sort of see in these charitable initiatives we were doing, these sessions, that people's emotional needs being seen, being heard, being listened to, letting them choose their brushes, control, you know, what color would you like, control in terms of picking their palette, a sense of being of value, sense of status, you know, attention to give and receive attention. So, you know, when you look at someone's emotional needs and you understand them, you can apply it in the beauty field and the work that you do, you know, as an artist. It gives you a great insight into people's behavior. Because people will always meet their emotional needs, whether they do it in a healthy way or an unhealthy way, they will do it, you know. And you might see someone who is really, you know, looking for attention a lot, maybe wanting, needing to be the center of attention the whole time. There might be a thing that they're not getting, you know, their attention needs met, you know. So there's all sorts of things you can discover about people that can be, you know, was hugely beneficial in terms of the work we were doing. But yeah, led me into a different road where I thought, actually, this is something that I'd like to do more of, and bring it into, you know, different areas of my life, really.
So I think makeup artistry itself is a kind of therapy, isn't it? Because you're getting up close and personal, you're invading somebody's personal space, with their consent, of course. But it's, and people obviously let their guard down as you're kind of making their face up, and they're kind of you're spending a lot of time with them. So did you find there was a lot of crossover with
Yes. And if you think about it, when people start relaxing, they often talk a bit more, you know, and you'll find that in the therapy room when someone, you know, if a client first comes in, they usually talk an awful lot in terms of they're on broadcast,
Yeah.
right? But whereas they relax more, they sort of slow down, and you start to get more information from them that is perhaps a deeper level. And you know, with touch, you're touching someone's face as a makeup artist. You know, often you're mirroring them.
It's very intimate in touching
Yeah,
in any other context.
absolutely. You know, there's a sort of certain level of trust there already because you're about to produce a look that they want to project onto the public. So yeah, there's definitely crossover there, definitely. And you often find, you know, people who have been makeup artists go into some sort of holistic practice afterwards. You know, so there is definitely crossover.
And you're saying that, not many people are having these conversations about, the influence that beauty rituals and practices can have on our psychological well-being. But do you think now that there are, there's social media, that there are a lot more kind of exciting, kind of buzzy beauty brands out there, that these conversations are starting to happening, that are starting to happen, and brands are starting to kind of wake up to this and talk about it a lot more?
There's definitely a shift in the landscape and the narrative, 100%. And there's much more diversity, inclusion, different shapes, sizes, you know, facial, you know, aesthetics, all this kind of thing. And there's also the narrative around, you know, yes, there's still some brands that talk about anti-aging, but there is a very different narrative coming through about it's okay to age. You know, it's a natural process. And there's certain people like Paulina Porizkova, for example, who was a supermodel from the 80s, sort of going on her whole social media is about, you know, unfiltered. You know, this is my face. This is what I look like at 55, this kind of thing. And you'll get the opposite extreme where people are doing plenty of treatments. And I'm not against either side, but I think the narrative, it's about, it's never either or. I think there's truth in all parts that will be suitable for people. So I think it's exciting in the fact that there's more awareness of the therapeutic value of makeup and rituals. And I know certainly there have been some brands that have done sort of things around breath work. And I think there was a collaboration between a sort of breath work app, well-being app, and a particular cosmetic brand. So that kind of thing is happening. I think it is a huge platform which can be put to even bigger use in terms of, you know, perhaps little, you know, community groups where there's more therapeutic knowledge imparted within it, outside of the, you know, joy of putting on your makeup or skin or whatever, to because I think knowledge can be hugely beneficial, and communities where they build relationships and it's perhaps facilitated can have huge benefit. I mean, I ran actually in one of the last project I've been working on for the last few years, last couple of years. I was running and facilitating community groups around emotional well-being. Now, to begin with, I was streaming makeup and things like guided imagery. Well, first of all, I was doing like a cleansing ritual, and then we'd do a guided imagery while I was doing the cleansing ritual and skin massage. So I was using, you know, metaphorical language, you know, a certain rhythm with sort of music in the background, and to help people relax. Because often when you use metaphorical language with people, it bypasses their natural resistance that brain has to change. So they all tend to relax more easily. So, you know, I was sort of doing these kind of things, and then I went into facilitating groups for the community that was had the membership on the platform. And what you find with communities, and when as a facilitator and you're exploring these different topics, people get to hear other people's challenges. And there's a huge benefit in that because people feel they're not alone. And I'm not the only one that's going through this. And then within that, you're helping teach practical tools and ways that people can benefit themselves, but also you're hearing from the community about as what's helped them, which can be hugely beneficial. So it's not about an expert imparting all the knowledge and, you know, I'm the one that knows it all. It's about the community coming together and sharing ideas with a set of principles that are respected and regarded. But there's huge growth in that. And the feedback I got from running these groups was the massive benefit it had from being part of a community like that. So I think with beauty brands, there's huge opportunity for something like that, you know, to have communities, outside of within the ecosystem of the brand that supports this kind of initiative. Because I think, yes, you can buy a product and you can go through your own lovely ritual and everything, but when you have a community and it's built on relationships, there's a much deeper power to that.
Definitely. I don't know if you're sort of a fan of Allies of Skin, but they do a lot of anti-acne content. And online on social media, they have kind of Q&A sessions and workshops. And they kind of create these communities of acne sufferers who can, take comfort in the fact that they're not alone and there are other people going through these issues. So, is that, you say that's a good example of a brand kind of.
Brilliant. And you can do it, you could do it for anxiety, which is, you look at some of the biggest mental health challenges right now. You're looking at anxiety and depression are still, outscoring and still going up despite, well, I say despite, I mean the economic system, economic sort of landscape at the moment, and the world is full of uncertainties, probably more than ever at the minute. But that is, and the cost of living and so forth, anxiety and depression are still huge issues for people. So I think you were talking about mild to moderate and anxiety. You could teach huge amounts to people within those sort of realms, I think. So yeah, I think the brand you're talking about, though, is exactly it.
And I guess it's a flip side of social media because, on the one hand, it is giving people more insecurities because they can't switch off and they have to filter everything. But on the other hand, it is kind of showing another side to beauty, which doesn't have to be this kind of one, specific ideal that everyone has to aspire
I
to.
think that is the world, though, isn't it? There is, there's an upside and there's a downside, there's a yin, there's a yang, there's a light and a dark, and I think it's, the social media has been the Wild West, and you can probably, it's unregulated and it's a problem with this younger generation. I mean, we're going to see that as it comes through. It's a tidal wave. You only have to read books like The Anxious Generation and see what's coming. In the sort of in that demographic of younger people. But outside of that, for those of us that haven't grown up with social media, that can have more of a sort of set of, we can stand back a little bit more. We have to regulate ourselves, really, and decide what's good and what's not. And as brands, there's an educational piece around that as well, isn't there?
Yeah, sure.
For younger generations. But yeah.
I mean, since lockdown, I think the beauty industry as a whole has got more wellness focused, and people are kind of using products not just to sort of look a certain way, but to feel good in themselves.
100%. I mean, lockdown sort of changed things a lot in that way, I think, because we had to find ways of working online. And I think that was, very beneficial in a lot of ways, actually, because, to be able to bring a community together. And in fact, one of the communities I was bringing together before I went to work for the company I was working for, I was just doing my own thing. You can join from anywhere. It can be a global platform. So from that point of view, from accessibility, it's hugely powerful, I think,
And what would be the sort of future of the beauty world that you would like to see?
I think just like exactly like you just said with the brand that's talking to acne sufferers, I think more of that around communities, relationships, imparting really beneficial knowledge, and practical tools, immersive experiences. So that people aren't just gaining knowledge, they're feeling something. They can understand that they have the power to create the emotional shift in themselves. And that's, a therapeutic discipline. If I have a client and they have anxiety, I can tell them all the knowledge in the world, but unless I can bring them, help support them, facilitate them through an experience where they can benefit, they can feel a reduction in their anxiety by doing something practical. So they can understand they created that. It was nothing to do with me. I just opened the door and showed them the way.
Just
So it's more immersive experiences like that, I think, can be really beneficial for people as well.
And I think what you were saying about young people and the sort of concerns around sort of mental health, there's also sort of conversations happening about how young girls are getting into skincare of like primary school age and a lot of kind of worry surrounding that. But at the same time, I remember sort of, beauty products when I was around, or maybe slightly older, like a preteen or just about to be a teenager. I'm really enjoying those beauty rituals and finding kind of comfort in sort of putting a little bit of like clear mascara on or whatever I was allowed to wear at the time. So there's that kind of, there's that dual-edged kind of.
Yeah, I wonder though, because you probably we the young girls now, it's very underpinned probably by social media content. So, it's that thing where as parents we can be overprotective of our kids in the outside world, but underprotective of the virtual world because we really don't know what they're consuming because it's fast and it's rapid and we don't know what's being said and it's, they have these phones. So, I wonder if that's the issue is that these kids are is underpinned by the social media content that probably when I mean I'm a bit older than you but when I was dabbling around with Miss Selfridge sort of it didn't have that undercurrent there the underbelly I was just sort of messing around thinking oh that looks nice I didn't there wasn't another narrative to it particularly.
But going back to the beginning when you were talking about how like the school system failed you a lot, and it's a shame because I remember when I was at school, I went to a girls' school and it was very much like you can't wear any makeup. If you had like nail polish, you were sort of sent to matron to take it off. And it just maybe it's a little bit, so I can kind of understand that, there's that sort of sense of what's appropriate when you're that age, but there's that sense of play and creativity that is associated that people sort of overlook when it comes to beauty. They just think, oh, well, you're trying to look too grown up, you're too old for your age, kind of thing. And it's sad that that play element often goes unremarked and unnoticed.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they've been teaching the same methods in school, and it's not suitable for the world we live in now, really. Do you know what I mean? It's like,
100%.
yeah, it's a that's a whole other
Whole other
conversation, though, isn't it?
conversation. Don't get me started about that. And in terms of like projects that you've got in the pipeline, what's next for you in your career? Because you've had such an amazing and varied career, so it'd be great to hear
Yeah, it's like a patchwork quilt, my career, isn't it?
best
I
kind.
mean. People are like, why don't you just stick with one thing? I'm like, I don't know. It's just, I like exploring different things. And I think that's also determining what success is for me now at this point in my life. And it's less based on an external validation of everyone giving me a round of applause and my name appearing in the press and more what actually fascinates me. And the project I was just working on, which was a being part of developing a preventative health system for people who are A, living with chronic conditions, but also for people to help give them everything they need for physical, emotional, and cognitive health in one ecosystem. So this was a digital and an offline initiative that I was running with the CEO of the company, and I was part of the therapeutic community groups that I was running and helping him design the system. So I think that gave me the opportunity to meet some incredible wellness leaders from people working in the NHS to a wonderful man who's been a fantastic mentor called Dr. David Riley, who was an NHS doctor for many, many years and then set up the first Centre for Integrative Care in Glasgow, where he was basically sent people who just there was no medical fix for them. And they were going through this, suffering with things like chronic pain, chronic conditions, and he would take them on this transformational wellness journey, looking at the foundations of what they need. What do we need as humans to be healthy and to be well? So that's been fantastic. And then I'm actually, that project's finished, and I'm actually going on to another one, which will involve children who are in residential and fostering care. And I'll be working with the same CEO, it's a parent company. I'll be working with them, in the capacity of creativity. I'll be creative development lead, but also with the human givens therapy angle. So that's my next one. And then all the other things I might do on the side, like things like this with you.
Well, it's been such a lovely chat, Lee. Thank you so much for giving up your time and speaking with me. It's been just a delight to chat to you, and I could probably chat to you about this all day. But thank you so much again, and can't wait to see what you get up to next. And you've had a you know I think we're sort of fed this idea that you have to sort of excel at one thing or just focus on one thing to be successful. And I think now people are moving away from that, and it's about those sort of hybrid careers and what can these things sort of
Yeah.
How can I say
transferable skills, and
it? Yeah.
what makes what fascinates you, and what makes you, what sits in line with your values and all of that,
Yeah.
but no, thank you for asking me on. It's been wonderful chatting to you, and thanks again.
Amazing. Oh, well, I hope that was okay and that you were happy with all the questions
Oh,
and
fabulous. Yeah, loved it. Easy peasy.
yeah, it was
I hope it
really
was all
lovely.
right for you.
Oh, absolutely. No, really enjoyed our chat and yeah, really can't wait to hear about these new projects. It sounds fascinating what you're doing, and it's making such a difference in people's lives. I think it's
Yeah, it's good fun.
incredible. And just the antithesis of like when people say, oh, the beauty world, it's this, that, it's frivolous. And it's like, well, no, there are people like you that are actually making a serious difference in people's lives. And there's
Yeah.
so much to be said for that.
Thank you. Thank you. Do you need a headshot or anything? Or,
Yeah, that would be brilliant if you wouldn't mind emailing it over and
yeah,
then
no
any
problem.
relevant links to your website or to the charities that you're working with, so people can find out more would be amazing.
Yeah, no problem. All righty.
Thank you
Take
so much again,
care.
Lee. Enjoy the
All
rest of your
righty.
day.
Bye.
Bye.